G'day, listeners. Welcome to Bar Karate, the sailing podcast. It is another week down, another week of sailing to talk about. I'm very excited to be here. My name is Jordan Spencer, and joining me is my good mate, Mr. Brett Perry.
Greetings, exalted one.
I've decided to apply for a new job.
Oh, good. What's that?
I'm going to be selling beer.
A beer? Yes, yes.
Yeah, I got the job. A very famous brewery.
Yep.
And I've decided that I think that's where I'm going to head.
Is
that okay with you guys? I just didn't mean to drop it on you.
You know, we have got our own beer. You're going to sell in opposition.
You're going to go up. Oh, sorry, I'm not introduced yet.
Well, I just thought, you know, I can't sit around any longer. You know, I've got to make it happen.
Okay. All right, let's bring the other bloke.
He had a voice that could make a Wolverine purr.
Mr. Nick Boss.
Man, I'm on a tight schedule.
Right.
As you know, I'm doing the Variety Club Bash this year with Snowdy, Mido, Kalen Howard. Oof. And there's actually an auction going on. It finishes at 5 today. Yep. And I'm trying to outbid Snowdy. By the time the listeners hear this, the winner would have been had. But trying to outbid Snowdy on a 1978 bottle of port, America's Cup edition.
Oh.
He wants to hold it pride and place. Yeah, the numbers are going up. We're currently sitting around a couple hundred bucks. So I'm planning to put my last bid in at around $4.59. I've spoken to a few blokes to get Snowdy in the pub this Arvo.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'll take him right at the tilt.
Just down to the West Lake Shore Hotel, he'll be fine there.
And then, Jordan, just one thing before we start. Yep. Just hit our bass line, can you, just quickly? So you'll like this. As you know, I've been playing social basketball.
Oh, no.
And in defence, you come down to the key and stuff, and all these guys that know about basketball and stuff, they're yelling to me, "Baseline, Bicey, baseline." And all I can think about is that bloody music. I'll start waltzing back down the court just with a little jive on.
Oh, you idiot. You idiot.
It does fit a little jive, a little bass line.
That's it.
Hey, well done. Good one.
All right. We better get into this because we've got a pretty cool guest this week. You guys aware of who we got?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. So this week was motivated by an anniversary. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's the 8-year anniversary of this person winning their gold medal at the Olympics as of right now. So we are very excited to introduce Zhu Lijia. I think I mangled that a little bit. Otherwise known as Lily in Western terminology, from China, the gold medalist from 2012, bronze medalist from 2008 in the laser radials. Lily, welcome to Bar Karate.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to join this podcast and hopefully to share some of my stories to all sailing friends. Thank you again.
Oh.
Hey, Lily, can I just start off by asking, are you an avid listener of Bar Karate?
Yeah, I've subscribed it from the end of last year. And I think personally, because I started to do a bit of media and then I would like to learn from you guys. So that's why I'm listening actively to any sailing podcast.
And I've
never missed one episode. And especially when I listen to some of the sailing friends I personally know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great interest.
Fantastic. And just so you know, you don't have to buy a T-shirt off the website because your merchandise pack will be coming soon, okay?
I'd just like to step back a little bit. How's that learning thing going?
What are you learning from us? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You are?
Yeah.
Lily, what have you learnt from listening to Bar Karate and how to be a better journalist?
I think personally, one of the thing I need to improve is obviously my English, because my main work is to the Chinese audience. And then when I started to do the laser sailing podcast for ILCA, International Laser Class Association, I think my biggest barrier probably the English, because that's not my mother language. And but still, I feel maybe because of my passion, similar to yours, to bring the good stories behind sailors to more people who are interested in this sport, and then encourage or inspire more people join our big family. So yeah, I think what I do is very similar to yours, and then I enjoy your stories, and I want to also share to as many sailing friends as possible.
Wow, that's very cool.
Well, I was gonna, but it's fair to say, to learn more English or better English from listening to us, we're probably not your best teachers in that respect.
Australian English, it's not the best.
three crazy Australians in a chat. I'd love to hear your podcast to hear what you'd picked up from us.
Yeah.
G'day, mate.
I think I still need to find the sailing specific also to improve my sailing knowledge as well. Oh. Because for my sailing career, I'm very one-way oriented, mainly the single-handed dinghy from Optimist Europe and the laser radio. Yeah. I haven't tried any other boat seriously, just occasionally for fun. I don't even know how to adjust the spinnaker, so, for example.
Wow.
And I've tried a little bit windsurfing. But in the Chinese sailing team environment or system, we have to do one thing most of the time. And we don't have that much freedom. So that's why I feel a bit ashamed that as a professional or Olympic sailor, I don't know how to sail many other boats.
I don't think there's anything to be ashamed about, to say that, to be honest. But I was just saying that earlier before we came on air, how I did spend some time in Qingdao, and we went to see the volleyballers training. And one of the things that was really quite standout for me, I was mentioning it to Nick, is that the person that was sort of doing the sets was just doing sets all day. The person that was doing spikes was doing spikes all day. The person serving was practicing serving. And then, so it's like you're saying, you just focused 100% on your discipline. That was it.
Yeah, for one thing is we have to obey everything from what the team set to us. For example, the plan, the training, and we can't really say no, otherwise we will be punished or being excluded from the team. But the good side, if we are positive, is that we don't need to worry about anything other than training and racing. And then we don't need to think about the financial thing, because everything's covered by the state funding. And my parents never need to pay a penny for my whole camping, for my whole sailing career. But there is a price to pay, which is freedom.
Wow. Did that line before.
well, let's explore that slightly. So, I mean, I got into sailing because I was a little baby and my mum and dad threw me on their boat. And then I think it's the same for my colleagues. You know, our families all sail, and we just got taken sailing. And we all grew up, you know, hanging around yacht clubs and mucking around, and that's where all our friends came from. And, I mean, is it the same experience in China?
Completely different.
Yeah.
When the sailing coach approached to my parents, because they first met my parents and introduced sailing, the Optimist class, they have no idea. And when I came out of the swimming pool, because I was a swimmer at that time from the age or 5 to 10. So every day I do 2 hours swimming training, and then my parents will pick me up after school, after swimming. And then obviously the sailing coach trying to pick up some sailors from swimming team, because she felt that if kids know how to swim, they're probably braver, more brave on the water. So that's how we met. But again, none of us have any idea I mean, my parents or me, of what sailing is. We try to dig really hard in our mind, but unfortunately, there's no such image or on the television or on the magazine or any press about what sailing is at that time in China, probably 1997. But we have a little bit image about Li Lishan, who won the gold medal in 96 Atlanta in the women's windsurfing. So that's the only image we had. And yeah, without knowing what sailing is or what optimist boat is, I was sent or driven by my father to the suburb of Shanghai. My hometown is Shanghai. And then we started a 2-week training camp in Shanghai Water Sports Center, and in 2 weeks' time. So during that period, we had a series of tests, like the physical exercise and then the reaction, the flexibility, all sorts of tests. And then I was lucky to be chosen among 50 kids to be one of the 3 girls to be selected. And then that's how I started sailing and become a member of the Shanghai sailing team.
So effectively, you were in that group to be selected to be an Olympic sailor.
I think it was a tough decision, because even though when I brought back the good news to my parents, because that 2 weeks I was away from home, the training camp, I just eat, live in the training center. And then when I came back and bring the good news, my parents doesn't seem to be lighting up, because if I choose sailing, that means I will have to be away from them for all year round, and I only got one holiday a year for 1 or 2 weeks' time. And I'm the only child in my family. So nowadays we can have second or third children for my generation, but for my parents' generation, I'm the only child. So they feel very sad. They don't want to lose me. I'm only 10 years old. But I think one of the good things is my parents really try to let me make the decision, unlike other kids. Maybe their parents say, you have to do this, you have to do that. But I said, compared with swimming, sailing so much more fun, then they respect my decision. Considering my age, my parents already very supportive, so I'm very grateful. And yeah, that's how I started my sailing career. And then under the Chinese sporting system, I become a full-time sailor athlete from the age of 10. And then yeah, just live together with the team, eat together. And because Shanghai is quite cold in the winter, so we always training in other provinces, like say in the southern China in winter and the northern China in summer, and only go back home after the nationals.
So let me get this right, Lily. From 10 years old, you've moved away from home and joined the sailing team on a full-time basis.
Correct.
Wow, it's a little different to the Port Lincoln Yacht Club.
Well, it's a little different to our mums coming down and making sandwiches on the Saturdays.
Yeah, wow, that's phenomenal. I didn't realise that was the extent of it. But obviously, and who did you go through the ranks with? Are there any people that we would know in the world sailing ranks from China that you went through that system with?
Sorry, I didn't get the question very well.
So when you went off to sailing school, was there anyone else with you or alongside you that we would recognise now that has done well from the world sailing point of view, or you were the shining light?
I think for my generation, probably I'm the only one. But then after me, there is a windsurfer who won silver in Rio. Yeah. Called Chen Pei Na. We met in the national team several years later. Okay. So, yeah, To start with, I was in the Shanghai sailing team, sailing the optimist class and a training all year round. We only got one nationals, unlike you got loads of regattas all year round, but we only got one nationals. And then if we are sailing well, then we got the opportunity to represent China for the Asian and World Games. Championship, mm-hmm. which I started doing from 1999, 2 years after, pick up sailing.
So 12 years old, you're off doing your first World Championships.
Mm.
And for your parents not being able to spend this time with you, and obviously, you know, it would be difficult for a young child, did things change? You won the world champs in the opties in 2001 and 2002, so only a few years later, you know, 4 or 5 years later. Did that change your parents' perception, or did that make it feel like it was worthwhile, the sacrifices then, it's just a result. You did what you were asked to do and you did it sort of thing.
I think for my parents, they would definitely feel they experienced a lot of downtime without their little daughter. And then they can't have a second child, so to speak. So even though I gradually pick up more gold medals in various events, but to them, probably they could feel, it's a shining lily. They are very proud of their daughter, but it's everyday life that counts to them. So,
It's a big sacrifice.
It is an amazing.
They even
amazing
considered
story.
Of adopt a baby.
Oh, wow. To replace it.
Yeah, because they feel so lonely without me being around.
So how many times were you seeing them a year? Like you said, you had 1 week or 1 week here, 1 week there. How many times were you actually seeing? Were they not able to come to any events at all? Or
probably just 1 or 2 weeks, depending on how long our holiday was.
So they didn't come to any events at all?
Oh, they were not allowed. So it's like a semi-army system that we can't go out and then they can't go in. Yeah. Wow. So throughout my sailing career, my parents probably only been to watch watched one event.
Wow.
I guess they've got it all on video. I mean, you must show them a lot and go, look, well, when you have your slide nights with the family and say, look, this is the gold medal race. And
I try to teach them how to understand when they watch on television, but it's still too difficult for them to grasp the whole meaning or how to count it. But they know how to look at the results, even though my parents don't know any English, but they are very good in searching for results in the international event now.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
So are people taking up sailing in China now by themselves, or is it all still about making the Chinese team? Is there leisure sailing in China?
Yeah. I think the good thing about the Chinese sailing in the last decade is since after the Beijing Olympic Games, when we got a windsurfer gold medalist, and then 4 years 4 years later, my gold medals, and made Chinese people aware that there are competitions like sailing. We got exciting races on the water as well. And maybe from 2008, more and more Chinese people learned our sport. And then from 2012 onwards, people are not satisfied just to know or understand the sport. They want to try. So that's why in the last decade, more and more new mariners being built and sailing class clubs being founded, and I'm very pleased to see a lot of club sailors now growing up, and then with the revolution of the Chinese Yachting Association, the club sailors now got the opportunity to compete together with provincial or national team who's campaigning for the National Olympic Games. If they are good enough, they can represent China for the international events as well. So I don't have the exact number, but I do believe that probably nowadays in China, there are more amateur sailors or club sailors than professional full-time training sailors.
Well, that's a good thing. Mm. Just quickly, you obviously don't spend any time on the water anymore as much as you used to, but are you involved at all with the selection processes or forms of training, or do you do any speaking to potential athletes or sailors in general at the moment, or do you don't have anything to do with it at all at the moment?
I'm not involved in those at the moment, sorry.
And does the similar system that you went through, Lily, does that still exist to the same level these days?
Yeah, the provincial and national teams still more or less remain the same, but it's just now the booster from the club sailors is getting more and more popular.
A broader pool of people.
Yeah. I think for the Chinese parents, they see sailing as a very high-profile sport, and they feel sailing can provide their kids or children more opportunities to go overseas or to study overseas. Even though the parents still, like my parents, they don't know much about sailing, but they felt sure that it is a good sport to be picked up, and then it can be a good companion for the rest of their kids' life.
Mm. And has that sort of paid true for you? Do you feel like it's opened the doors up for certain activities and things for you now?
Can you repeat again?
Has that opened the door up for you personally now with your career outside of sailing?
I think yes and no. For one thing, I wasn't involved closely with any of the sailing clubs or the education system, but every time I go back to China, I got lots of invitation. I will go and visit certain sailing schools or sailing clubs and talk to the young sailors or amateur sailors and trying to give them a few tips, etc.
What about the win for Dongfeng in the last edition of the Volvo Ocean Race? Did that have much reaction in China?
Unfortunately, no. I think the press coverage is amazing. So we can see all press has released this news. But sadly, didn't attract much attention of the Chinese people.
Okay.
So the Chinese still very much into Olympic sports, Olympic games,
yep,
but not into professional sailing,
yep,
events, okay, like the America's Cup, or Ocean Race, or Vendée Globe. Very low, attention's being put on this or attraction to the Chinese people.
Which is quite funny because when I spend a bit of time there, we'd go in and we'd sit in the room and we'd meet the people, and we were talking about various activities that sailing could bring along. And one of the first questions that was always asked was, how do we win the America's Cup? That was the question all the time. I got it every time. And my answer basically became pretty straight. It was, well, if you've got $250 million, you could probably go all right.
I was going to say, if you got $250 million, don't bother. But if you got 500, come and see me.
I think for the whole AC, if there's anything attract the community of the Chinese people, will be those luxury brands.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, Lily, of course, I'm not sure if you're even allowed to speak this, but you didn't have an easy start in life. I mean, you were born with, I guess, is there only hearing in one ear and you're sort of partially blind? Is that correct? You had a...
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've done all this...
I only have half of the hearing of ordinary people, and then my left eye cannot make out anything clearly. So I'm mainly using my right eye. Right. And for my hearing, nowadays I feel fine because I can wear hearing aids. And when I'm using headsets, I can turn up the volume. And on the water, when I sail, I can hear people shouting because they're very, very aggressive about whether to keep clear or not. And that's fine. Also for about the starting gong, which is loud enough. Maybe I can't hear very clearly if I start by the ping end. But definitely I will be very careful to time up the 5 or 4 minutes.
Yep.
And that's also okay with my sailing. But to start with, I must admit I had quite difficult time because my peers or my teammates, they often try to joke at me and make fun of me for not being able to hear everything they say.
Yep.
And gradually I become more and more quiet and couldn't chat or play with them. Then what I did is just sort of to confine myself in a corner, and after training I just read books and then do some self-study, whereas my teammates probably they can playing cards and chatting and then watching shows, TV series and movies, etc. So I sort of isolated myself for the first few years. It was not until when I got some medals and then people start to look me differently.
Mm. I was going to say, the difference between them and you is you got a gold medal, they didn't.
Yeah, but I could feel in the Western or some developed country, it's a completely different story. So, for example, when I first started to study in the UK, I got extra care for my disability. Yeah. Whereas in China, I don't feel being equal, to be honest.
Okay. Well, so it was more than that, though, because your first Olympics was 2008, but it could have easily been 2004, couldn't it, in the Europe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After winning the World Championships in 2001 and 2002, I was actually giving the opportunity to join the national team straight away after retiring from Optimist and then jump onto the Europe boat because all the Chinese coaches or leaders can see I got certain talent in the international events, even though I may be too young or too new to the Europe boat. But giving time, they believe I can stand out. But unfortunately, I got an operation to remove a tumor from my left leg at the end of 2002. And I had to be away from training or sailing for a whole year to recover from the operation. And by the time I went back to the team again at the end of 2003, the selection was over. So I had no hope to make the Athens Games, which is a bit pity.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and then you
full-on story.
Amazing, isn't it? You go on and win a bronze medal and then you win the gold in London. And one of the big honours they gave you was to carry the flag at the closing ceremony, which is an amazing honour. One of our good friends was the flag carrier, also a sailor, for the Australian team, Malcolm Page, or I suspect you know Pagey. You know, and I read somewhere they were saying that, you know, not only because of your accomplishments, but because of what you've overcome, they wanted to reward you for that. So is that true?
Yeah, my country, on one, first of all, they felt I won the sailing gold medal in Britain, which is a similar example, like if a British table tennis player win a gold in Beijing.
Yeah,
because we all know British won the most Olympic gold medals among all other countries. And yeah, my country felt extremely proud of my achievement. Mm. And on the other of those difficulties or disabilities, I overcome throughout the years for my sailing career. They felt it's a very inspiring stories for all other Chinese teenagers. And I was very surprised to get a phone call on the day of the closing ceremony asking me to drop on a car and then driven from Weymouth to London, and only got a few hours to prepare beforehand. Wow. But it was an amazing experience together with other sailors like Michael Page and Ben Ansley. We got, I think, six sailors represent their countries for the closing ceremony, which is also very proud moment for our sport.
Unbelievable. Fantastic.
That is a very cool thing. I've sort of got this vision of you guys in the stadium after you've marched around with the flags, like having sword fights with the pretend sword fights with the flags, you know, all the sailors having a bit of fun with each other. That's kind of the vision I have of the closing ceremony. But, you know, it's pretty fun. Is that what happened?
The sword fight.
Oh dear. All right, so when you actually went to the Olympics as a sailor, what did you feel like when you first got there? Like, I guess what I'm trying to understand is, when did, like, has it always been about achievement, or is sailing fun for you? Like, so when you got to the Olympics, was it this is relief or this is amazing sort of thing?
I think for my first Olympics, I must admit I was too nervous. I couldn't relax. I couldn't sleep. So I think because of the home Olympics, I not only the pressure from the Olympics itself, but also from the home expectation. Like everyone you see around Qingdao knows about me and they recognize me and they want to cheer for me and then say something to me. Oh, Lily, you must win gold. Oh, Lily, your world championship. Let's see you on the podium, etc. I just feel those invisible stress. And it was not until probably a few days after the first few races I start gradually relaxed and then back to my normal self. I will feel, oh, I've been training so many years for this special moment. I can't ruin it by pure nervousness. I want to treasure it with all my heart. So that's where I started to relax and then give the best of my performance. And I was very pleased to win the bronze medal. And it was after this first Olympic experience that I realized how important the sports psychology is, and started to read more books about psychological exercise, self-talk, rehearsal, meditation, and then used it to my everyday training. And then I found my training quality has improved a huge amount. And I remember, one of the book, the sentence says, maybe physically you can only go to the Olympics a few times. And then because the it's so few opportunities that makes you feel extremely nervous. But if you meditate it in your mind over and over again, and then you will make yourself familiar with the environment, and by the actual time you walk into the Olympics, you feel you are at ease because you meditate hundreds and thousands of times. You know how to deal with it. It's all in your subconscious mind and you can deal with it. You can, I can perform myself even under some pressure. So that's why I think helped me to win the gold in London, because I felt myself more mature or more be able to control myself in terms of psychology. But for the other question about whether I enjoy sailing, I also felt very fortunate because under the Chinese system, we've sort of been forced to train and sail every day. We only got one rest day, which is Sunday, for the whole week, and then only one holiday. I'm so envious about other foreign sailors. They can go back and see their friends and family almost after every event. So you have a bit of rest and then refresh yourself, and coming back, you're still motivated to train, but that's not the case for us. Because we're being forced to do this and that, we lost our motivation. But I say I'm quite fortunate because probably because since I got some disability, I couldn't enjoy the same opportunity of other people. And that makes me more enjoy the freedom on a boat on water. It makes me feel I'm equal to everybody else. It only matters who sails the fastest. It doesn't matter whether I only have half of the hearing ability or my left eye has, I couldn't see anything. And I really enjoy what sailing brings to me. And then that's why I'm willing to give everything, the hard training or the injuries, etc. But on the other hand, if I can train more systematically or scientifically, maybe I won't end up with so many injuries, which ultimately mean that I may still be able to campaign because, competing at the Olympics will always be my first will or my first dream. And for our sport, we are so lucky that we can sail all our lifelong. Even in the Olympic Games, we got people, very good sailors in their 40s and 50s. I counted after Rio Games, after seeing Santi won the gold at the age of 54. And I said, by the age of 54, it will be my ninth Olympic Games. I sort of still dreaming that kind of, I'm more than wanting to that kind of life. But unfortunately, because of the overtraining in my early years, I had injuries from head to toe, and I can't really bear any intensive training, which I ended up now as a sailing media freelancer.
So that's where you are now, Lily. As a freelance media, specializing in sailing. And just before talking about that, maybe just take us back how you got to that point. So you studied journalism, is that right?
Yeah.
And was that in China or you studied abroad?
After 2016 Rio Olympics, I was still aiming for 2020 Tokyo. And then I tried to fix my injuries, which is mainly my shoulder, AC joint, very inflamed. I did traditional Chinese therapy for 6 months, which doesn't work. I also I ended up having the operation on each of my shoulders. And in a year's time, I'm still in pain. So that's when I started to think about if I can't do my first will, which is sailing and competing myself in the Olympic Games, what else can I do? What else I want to do? And then this media thing sort of pops out. And after years of dealing with the media, I feel I'm quite interested. And then especially combined with my dream to promote sailing in China, it's given a good opportunity or platform for me to do this and to achieve that will. And also in China, we don't have sailing-specific journalist or reporter. So I've sort of replaced that gap, and then I can do something I either enjoy and also fulfill my other dream to see more people in China can pick up sailing.
That's very cool. Very cool. So then one of the parts to Nick's question was, where are you actually studying? Because you're in England at the moment, aren't you?
I'm in China, in my hometown Shanghai now.
Okay.
Yeah, the majority of the time I was living in the UK, and I studied the sports broadcast journalism in Solent University, based in Southampton. So after 2012 London
right
Games, I mainly live in the UK because I enjoy my private life there. I got more privacy. I got more sailing environment or atmosphere. But for my media work or for my sailing career, I still do it for China. And yeah, back to the question about where I do the media work. And my main audience will, of course, be the Chinese. I do a little bit for the English, which is the laser sailing podcast and any events if they need me to do some commentating or reporting, etc. But yeah, mainly to the Chinese people. And while I'm in the UK, I can only do it online. But without the COVID, I probably would be busy traveling a bit. But since the special situation or the pandemic now, I was in the UK for the first half of the year. So my plan was to spend 3 or 4 months in China to do a bit of actual work instead of online all the time.
There you go.
Actual work.
Nice park in front of the Southampton University. You can just walk straight across the road into the park there and have a nice little lie down on the grass.
Yeah, it's very close to the Solent, many marinas and many sailing clubs. Yeah. And also during my university study, I tried some yacht racing or sailing and then did lots of RYA courses, which I also enjoy very much. And then this gives me the opportunity of knowing how to teach people to sell from the beginner level, because even though I sell in a high level in single-handed dinghy, but maybe when I talk to a beginner of how to sell properly, I don't know what's the best way to approach them. But those RY courses are brilliant. Yeah.
So Lily, when you were in Southampton and you were doing some keelboat sailing, did that give you a desire to continue keelboat racing?
No doubt. Earlier you mentioned about Dongfeng. Probably you don't know, I actually did some training with them in Portugal.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But just purely because my body won't support me or allow me to do this. So I'm like a glass girl, very vulnerable. I've been joked by many people. So if I spend a few hours on water, it's windy or it's cold, then my muscles start spasm and my neck will get stuck. So of course, as a sailor, I want to try some professional sailing, whether that be inshore or offshore. And again, yeah, if I can't do this, that's make up my current situation now. Maybe just as a media role, role can still do something related to sailing. And I wish I can travel a bit to report those professional sailing events.
I think, Lily, maybe you need to look at somewhere like the south of Spain or maybe France, Mediterranean, to do your sailing, because it's a lot warmer down there. You find that it would be, you could do just as much keelboat racing down there.
That's a good suggestion. I'm yet to try that out.
There you go.
Thanks for your tips.
I think they might change your philosophy there a little bit about you being a bit vulnerable. I think when you get down there, you'll be right into it.
Mm-hmm. Worth trying. Definitely going to.
I think there's room here, Lily, that you could have a great commentator's career and you could see yourself in a commentary box next to Jordan Spencer, the second best commentator in the world, sailing commentator. So keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, would love to.
Actually, on the whole boat thing, if you could sail any boat on the planet right now, is there any boat that really you want to try that excites you when you look at all the sailing boats that are out there now?
You mean for any sailing or any sort of sailing?
Any sailing.
If you could just, what boat would you number one like to go for have a go and sail on?
The ocean race.
You'd like to do the ocean race?
There we go. Mm.
Good answer.
Yeah, I want to sail around the world.
I'll send you two T-shirts.
Probably too ambitious to do the Vendée Globe. So the first step, the first dream will be the ocean race,
right.
Or maybe the Clipper race.
Yeah. Well, obviously with the move, with the ocean race going to the 60s, they need smaller crew. now. The size of the crew, we think, is going to be a big thing. So, you know, it could work for you. You're actually, when I look at your body size, you're actually kind of the perfect size for a laser radial, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm 71.76 meters high, and my weight was used to be 65 to 70, which is indeed ideal for laser radio class. But I remember when I was sailing Optimist or Europe, I need to lose weight.
Actually, going back then, all the way back to when you started out with the sailing school, was that a big part of it also, looking at your body composition, at what height you're going to be to really aim you into a specific class?
Yes, those are some kind of standards. When the coach approached to my parents, she actually already started to examine my parents, looking at my parents. Oh, pretty high, skinny, and then very good size for future Olympic dinghy sailing, but probably a bit too big for Optimist in later years. So unlike the Western world, I guess if you are already too high or too heavy for the Opti, you will transfer to the next laser radial 4.7 or 420 or 29er. But in China, we don't have this middle class or development class. It's sort of jumped directly from Opti to the Olympic classes. Also, on the other hand, the coaches pick our birth year exactly to fit the national games and the Asia games. So we are the oldest age for the Opti limit. So we can be the most experienced, the most mature sailors. And but then we have to spend month and month and years time to lose weight to keep it on the 50-ish. I remember, I was already 1 meter 72 high, and naturally probably my weight will be over 55, but I every day I eat so little, so few to keep my weight under 50. And then as soon as I finished the Asia Games at the end of 2002, my weight jumped from 50 to 60 in 1 month's time.
Hamburgers.
Yeah.
Well, we're pretty good at doing things like that.
Yeah.
But it normally takes beer.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you didn't drink beer for a month back then.
Yeah. Okay. Very unique experiences.
Well, actually, can I just go on to you talked about the psychology in your competition, and you referred to the psychology when you won the gold medal. Now, I'm not sure if people will remember, going into the gold medal race in London, we were chatting to Annalise Murphy a few weeks ago, and there were four people. It was Marit Baumeister, and then Evie Van Acker, and yourself and Annalise were all within 1 point going into that last race. And we spoke to Annalise, and she said, you know, her psychology just was not there. And, you know, it was much better in Rio. It obviously worked out very strongly for you in 2012. You know, you went 1 point massive, and you led that last race from start to finish, from memory.
Yeah. I think what matters the most for those big events like the Olympic Games is the mental toughness. And everyone going to the Olympics will surely feel some kind of nervousness. And all the time we put so much attention on improving our fitness and sailing skills, but we sort of neglected the importance of psychology. It was not until, like, for example, Annalise or me in our first Olympics when we felt, we don't know how to handle this kind of tricky situation or the very mixed mind state, then we started to realize how important it is. talks back to what I mentioned earlier. So after Beijing, I started to do meditation almost every day. And even before the fitness training, I will quietly go through my mind lying on the bed and what I want to improve, what I want to achieve, what I want to focus on. And later on during the actual session, I appear so much more focused and then have a clear mind and purpose of what I want to do and what I want to achieve. And one other example I can give you is I had a bike accident in January, at the end of January 2012, 6 months before the Games. I broke my hand. And after the operation, I couldn't sail for 3 months. So I tried to think positively and not to cry over the split milk. And I do meditation every day, just as if I was sailing every day. And in terms of fitness, I can still do my weight session, core, static bikes. And in 3 months' time, my fitness actually increased or improved. And ironically, the very first event I went back to is the year World Cup, and it was Mistral all week long, windy every day. And then sailing strong wind has always been my weaknesses, because I'm very good in light wind and I enjoy sailing light and medium air, where strong wind, I feel my fitness is always not as good as Marit, Alison Young or Annalise. Or E.V. Van Acker. So I sort of have a less good upwind speed compared with those sailors. But after that accident, that 3 months, because my fitness improved since I fully focused on the training, even though I couldn't move my hand very much. But since I've picked up the psychology tips, and after meditate every day in my mind about sailing, I felt I've never been away from my boat for a single day. And then for my very first event, I went back to race, I won, which surprised everyone. That is the power of the inner strength.
And in strong wind.
And in strong wind.
Amazing.
I do want to highlight, though, that your philosophy was to meditate and do all that training, and Annalise just had a beer. That was
really
her. That's what she said. She just had a beer and relaxed.
On the last night, she needed herself. A beer. Lily, of course, the physical training and just sailing every day is a big part of it, and just being out on the water. But tactically, having not. Well, I guess you've basically grown up, but you learnt the tactics out on the water, or there was some pretty intense theoretical lessons or classes that went into it as well?
In China, my coaches actually haven't sailed a boat. They coach us or teach us. They've been sailed before. So, for example, my optimist coach, she sailed laser radial actually, but she never sailed opti. And then my radial coach, he sailed Flying Duchess, those old Olympic classes, but he never sailed lasers. But in China, we don't have those very specific class sailing coaches. And what I learned the most is from those English sailing books. So after I picked up the English, which is very useful tool and opened up the door for me to reach the Western world. And instead of dig and explore myself in China like everybody else, I suddenly felt, I picked up this knowledge and that knowledge, which already been explored, already been discovered by Western people, and I can just pick up here and there and then try out on my own sailing. And many of them worked. So I feel benefit a lot from reading those sailing books, whether that's techniques or boat handling or tactics. And then there's just so many of them to choose from. I guess probably for you, you don't cherish as much as I do because in China I don't have anything. And then once I opened myself to search in English books, I was just like being in heaven. I couldn't help but absorb all of them.
Clearly,
it is amazing.
Clearly, you didn't read Stuart Walker as your first book, because you would have never picked up another one after that. He would have put you to sleep straight away. You can imagine going, learning English and then picking up, you know, there's, I don't know if you, have you, any of you guys read any of Stuart Walker's tactics books? Oh, mate, my God.
You've got to read one book before you start worrying about a tactic book.
Yeah, yeah. I know what I was going to say.
I'm not much of your reader.
But
if you have good experience to coach to pass on those knowledge to you, that's fine. Sure. So that's why the Chinese team started to get to employ more and more foreign coaches to help us, like Brett.
Yep.
Like Brett,
yeah,
BP.
Yep.
All right. Very cool. Now, we have to ask, you know, obviously 2016 didn't go too well for you. Three disqualifications. I remember one being a what we call a BP, a port starboard with Paige, I reckon. And I can't remember what the other two were, but 2016 wasn't the best Olympics for you. Was that hard?
Yeah, it was very hard. But on the other hand, I actually enjoyed it the most. It feels like in terms of the mental side, 2008, I was very nervous. 2012, under control. And it was not until my third Olympics I started to enjoy completely.
There we go.
I enjoy every bit of them. But, yeah, 1 month before the actual Games, my injury become more and more serious. I couldn't train my upper body. I couldn't sail. Wow. And in order to complete the event, I took the cortisone injection on both my shoulders. It was pain-free for the first 2 days, but later on it all came back again. That's why probably for the first 2 days inside the bay, I was performing quite good.
Yeah, you're lying first or
because
something.
Because for the flat water, we don't need to do too much cheating. Whereas if we racing outside the bay, we got big waves, and then I can't just put my sheets in the cleat. I have to adjust it, but that's what I struggle very much.
Wow.
But in terms of the three qualification, on the port and starboard one with Paige, I remember I was about 1 to 2 boat length away from the mark, the windward mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best bit for me to do the exoneration or the turns would be after rounding the mark so I can get clear of the crowds. Whereas if I do it immediately around the mark area, I will find it difficult to keep clear of other boats. So that's why I decide to take my turns after rounding the mark, which is easier to sail the reaching or downwind away from the other boats. But then it took much longer than I expected. It was true. Probably between 30 seconds to a minute, it was very long because the wind started to die and we got stronger and stronger currents, which is against us. I think that's probably the reason, even though I did my turns, I was still disqualified, which I do feel a bit unfortunate.
Yeah.
A bit ripped off.
A bit ripped off,
say.
That's the word.
Yeah, a bit. That's
there's an Australianism for you.
Hey, let's focus on something positive. So who's the friends, that people you've become closest to in the world of sailing? Because you're a friendly person. Who are the people that you've become best friends with?
Probably Evie Van Ecker.
Yeah.
I don't know how. It just happened to be our boat happened to be parked together for many events. And then while we were waiting for wind, we start to chat. But I don't think I I hope that I can socialize a bit more with other sailing friends, even though we are rivals on the water. But for my team rules, we can't go to parties. We sometimes skip the opening and closing ceremony, which is, yeah, they sort of deprived of all the fun experience from us. And they, yeah, that's why I feel a bit sad that to see all the sailors going out for a drink. It was not until when I start to study in the UK that I had my first taste of beer or cider.
Wow.
And then and I enjoyed the time in a pub.
Beauty.
Yeah, you are a sailor, Lily.
Yeah,
no matter what your upbringing is and if your parents weren't into it, but you truly are a sailor. That's great. If you enjoy going having a beer at the pub, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. The good thing is it's still not too late for me. I can start to enjoy a bit more socializing sailing life with other sailing friends.
I think you've got a lot of catching up to do.
the good thing for you is, Evie has a very good record as she does a lot of commentary for ISAF, so, you know, you might end up doing some together.
Yeah, she did all the commentary for the World Sailing World Cup events, and maybe she was planning to Tokyo as well. In terms of English commentary, I'm not very confident.
If I was you, I'm really impressed with your English. I have no problems. I think you'd be a fantastic commentator. Yeah.
I probably feel I would be in a better position to talk to sailors and interview them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the right start for you.
Put it this way, Lily, and sorry to shut you down there, Jordan, but if you and Jordan were sitting in the commentary box, your English would be fine. But if you had to do it in Chinese, whoo. They leave Jordan for dead.
That's it.
Yeah, I guess there's no shortage of English commentators.
That's right.
But only one or two Chinese. So I'd better stick to my Chinese audience and provide them the service.
No, that's what I was going to say. I think you provide a character, and I think that's the good part about our sport is that all these different personalities, accents, be it accents or personalities. I think that's what it's about.
Actually, Lily, I should send you some photos of Evie after her and I sitting next to each other in a commentary box for a week. There's
her
photos.
Ears were bleeding. There's blood literally coming out of her ears listening to Jordan day in, day out.
There's a photo of her strangling me and a photo of her trying to stab me with a pen. So,
really?
No, in fun. She's a lovely lady.
Yeah. I like her character very much.
Now, one of the things, we're sort of very close to the end of the time that we've got. One thing that, you know, the Chinese have always been really, really good is they sort of westernise for us. So all three of us in the bar karate team, we've all been to China a bit. Multiple times going to China, and often, you know, someone like you also might, you know, use the Western name of Lily, you know, and we don't have a Chinese name to give back. We've never thought about that. And, you know, maybe it's time we return the favour. Could you suggest any Chinese names that we could use for ourselves?
Yeah, sure. I'll try and see if you can pronounce it correctly. But it's very close to the English pronunciation. So Jordan Spencer is Qiao Dan Si Peng Sai. Qiao Dan Si Peng Sai.
I'm loving this. Qiao Dan Si Peng
Sai. And then for Nick Bice is Ni Ke Bi Qi.
That's a beauty.
Ni Ke Bi Qi.
It's quite similar to in Italy, bicce. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. So, and then for Brad Perry is Bulaita Peli.
Bulaita Peli.
Yeah, Bulaita Peli. Let me repeat again. Qiao Dan Si Peng Sai, Jordan Spencer. Nick Bice, Ni Ke Bi Qi. And Brad Perry, Bulaita Peli.
Ah,
you got
it.
That?
Yeah.
Got it.
Let me repeat
fantastic.
It.
Bloody pelly.
Chow dung.
So next time you go to China, you can tell people your Chinese name.
That's very good. Ask Nick what bice means in Swedish.
Swedish.
Yeah. It's the term bice in Swedish actually means shit. So whenever I am in Sweden or doing any talks or anything and my name comes up, there's always a little giggle. Laughter that comes across the crowd. Once they start getting it and you see them poking their friend next door and then they all start laughing. So it's a pretty good icebreaker, I must admit.
How do you open the speech up? Yeah, I got it.
I know what it is. Yeah, I know right what it on. Means.
Yeah. I'm hearing you.
What's the name head in – what's the word head in Swedish? Do we know that?
Head.
I'd like to call you Bice Head in Swedish.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. You've got a much bigger one. Just remember that.
All right. Well, being childish now. Hey, any other questions for our fantastic guest, you two?
Just one final one from me, Lily. Is there anyone we should watch out on who's part of the Chinese regime that might have been listening to this and we may have let a little slip of the tongue saying that there were certain things different to the Chinese setup to the Western civilization setup? Do we need to be aware of anyone coming down on Baccarati?
Maybe, for example, my windsurfing friend, Chen Pei Na.
Ah, okay.
He speaks okay English, but in terms of other sailors who may speak fluent English, one of the girl named Song Kun. I'm not sure whether you're interested of more amateur sailors who's sailing around the world, the whole legs for clip around the world race.
Oh yeah,
okay.
And I think those boys who sailed with Dong Feng, they exactly. all speak English.
Yeah.
And then considering for the last few years, they gained quite a lot of experience with those foreign sailors. Yeah. Yeah.
Including swearing in French, I believe.
I think both Pascal and the skipper,
Charles.
Yeah, they're all very good people.
Actually, Lily, I'll tell you a thing of interest that happened to Nick when he was a child. He got selected by the Australian Sports Program at the age of 11 to be... to try out for our table tennis, national table tennis team. And he got booted after 1 week.
Oh, really?
He kept trying to do naked laps of the table.
Here we go.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Don't listen to him, Lily.
Don't listen to me, no. Making stories
I still
up.
Wish I could watch the Australia Open one day.
Oh, the Australian Open. The tennis?
Sure.
In the tennis? Or the...
I love watching some of those games because quite often people ask me, Lily, if it were not for sailing, what the second sport you want to do?
Yep.
My answer is tennis because I think I like the idea of being more professional, like they have lots of events throughout the year. Whereas when I was a little sailor, I always dreamed of doing more and more events, but very limited opportunities. But I saw, wow, those tennis players, they got loads of events to choose from. My figure is quite suitable for tennis as well.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, come down, but not for a while because it's not too good in Victoria at the moment where the Australian Open is. But
Yeah. Wait to the end of this year then.
Yes. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be us. I think we should say very much a thank you. We've enjoyed talking to you a lot. I think.
Absolutely.
Chow down.
My pleasure.
Chow down, Nika, and Buleta have all. have all enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah. Hope I can meet you in person next time I travel to Australia.
Absolutely.
We'd love it.
Be sure to do that, Lily.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Make it a plan.
Yeah, you've got to buy me Australian beer.
We can do that. We know someone in the game.
Yeah. We can probably do one better than that.
Thank you very much as well.
Good on you, Lily.
Thank you, Lily. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Got to say, gentlemen, going into that one, I hadn't met Lily before. I was not sure how it was all going to go, and she is just lovely. That was really interesting and kind of incredible in some ways as well.
I've said it, I think, 3 or 4 times during the show, amazing. One of the things that people probably don't appreciate is the regimented way in which they go about their training, and the fact that she was just almost plucked out of a pool of people and put into a training camp and then taken from elected to go to this training camp and spend so much time away from her family at such a young age. And the way they train is just so different as she explained to what we do, you know, whereas we're about having fun on the weekends with the friends. For them, it was training, you know, 5-6 days a week. It's amazing.
Well, and it sounds as though that's what she missed too, having fun with her friends on the weekends. I was totally unaware of the level, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And it blew me away.
It's kind of sort of what I said to you before the show about the volleyballers. That's what they do. It's just drilled nonstop, and it's quite amazing. The gymnasts, the volleyballers, the table tennis, all those people, they just train nonstop.
Mm.
Well, I'm quite
experienced in a few certain areas that I've pretty much done exactly that. You know, what do they say? 10,000 times to become an expert.
10,000 hours. 10,000 hours.
Take a guess what it is.
Mastery. You idiot. Oh, dear. 10,000 hours to mastery. Yeah, that was your first week, wasn't it? 18 years in 1 month. 10,000 hours to mastery.
Yeah, nailed it. But yes, really, really cool story. And the mental strength, I think, is the big thing that you probably pull out of that. The mental training she did to get herself to that point and to win gold in that way of training. I mean, it is an amazing story. Learning the rules by books. I mean, come on.
Well, we all do that effectively. But the thing I took out of it, there were two things, is one, that she still got a lot of joy and happiness in her. It wasn't beaten out of her. And two, the way she answered our questions was very, very much around her process. So she thought everything through and just went through it step by step, which, you know, probably is one of the keys to success as a sailor, being able to break things down into a process and actually work through things step by step, you know, rather than being emotional or anything like that. So, yeah, superstar. Yeah. Loved it.
Fair call.
Good work, BP. You organised that one. Gentlemen, all our listeners who have ordered T-shirts have been getting their T-shirts this week. So that is my favourite. The favourite comment I saw was, it's not a scam.
It's not a scam.
That is... I'm going to have to rank up there as one of the greatest comments we've seen ever on our Facebook.
I can't believe it. It's not a scam. My T-shirt hadn't arrived.
Well, it was sent to me as a message.
Yeah.
And then I thought, we have to publish this.
Yeah, yeah. And well done for it. It just gone absolutely nuts. I shared it off to my other places and it's just gone.
The other thing about these shirts is they look good. They look really, really good. And to give some detail to that, my beautiful wife, who I love dearly, she's quite unique in her approach when it comes to things. She's black or white.
Oh really?
hence
from the body of the same name.
Hence being your wife.
What are you saying?
Well, I'm saying she's very unique.
Things starting to come together.
Yeah. Yeah. No, anyway, so she... if she doesn't want something, if she doesn't like something, don't matter how much she cares about it, it's not happening. And a couple of times I've said, tried to show her a T-shirt. She'll go, oh, you like this? You like this? Nope. Nope. Won't. There's no way I can swear. And I bought her a Barkerati T-shirt. And I was thinking, she'll never wear this. And she's got it out. I've got it out and I showed her and she's tried it on. And she's gone, geez, this is good. This is good. Can I get another one in a different colour as well? And I'm going, yeah, you can do whatever you want. We own the company. So, if you're interested. I think they're almost gone now anyway. So we'll have to do another run.
Literally only got a handful left. But I've become the Henley South newsagent's best customer this week. Yeah. And got a free hat out of them.
Got a free hat.
Yeah. Henley Henley Sharks.
So they're good at they're good at passing out their merchandise packs then.
Yep.
Yeah.
spend money.
Good work. Hey, actually on that, if we sell out, and people want them, we'll go and print another batch. But we're also going to the artists now to come up with the logo for the beer. That has to be – we've given a pretty defined request as to what we want. We won't tell you what it is yet, but maybe we'll do a few T-shirts with the logo.
That includes you too, BP.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah. Don't worry. Why do you think I've got a job with an opposition brewery?
Well, what do we want to tell BP about the beers? Let's just explain what's going on.
Should I ring up the brewery and tell them I don't have to work because I might have another job with another brewery?
Well,
I wouldn't get too carried away just yet.
Yeah. All right. But so I can go to the induction week then.
I think maybe next week we'll explain in a lot more detail. But put it this way, we've been working quite closely with a brand expert who has given Barkerati Lager its own language. Blows you, it literally blows you away.
Yeah.
And it's a surprise, BP.
Yeah.
Because we're going to read this out to you live and to the listeners, on the show.
Yeah.
And to listen to this, and I put it this way, I read it to my wife, who doesn't drink much at all, not to mention drink no beer at all. And she's like, oh,
yeah,
I really want a beer right now.
Absolutely the same reaction with my wife as well. It was incredible. And I've sat through probably 30 years of lifetime of this corporate, where you go through all these corporate sort of things, and it's the first time I've walked out and just going, holy dooly. And whatever we spent on that was worth it, Bossy.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
Wow, now it's just dangling a carrot in front of my face. You know what it's like.
Another week for you, BP, before you know what's going
on. What's another week? Who cares? It's bloody been a year so far.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Moving away from beer. So, as you know, I've had a few people I've coached for a long time, and one of the kids I've coached, James Hodgson's, and he's gone on and won a couple of the World Youth Match Racing Championships, and now he's part of the CYC program for the Youth Americas Cup. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to raise their funding in a world without funding. And I was trying to – he was trying to explain to him how it works and what he needs to do and how they reach out. So they need to raise a bit of money to go and do this. And if you're listening and you want to get behind some of the future superstars of our sport, then just contact us and we'll put you in touch. Absolutely. But like I was trying to explain, you need to try and find brands that were looking for a youth-orientated market that want to reach a global audience. And also the element around, you know, I'm not sure we're going to be able to do the entertaining clients. I'm not sure that's going to be able to run in New Zealand. But like, from a sponsorship perspective, what do you think these teams should be considering? We've got all these young kids who've focused on sailing. Now they've got to get the money to get to the event. What do you reckon they should think of?
Is this your pitch for Barkerati to sponsor one of the youth?
No. We
America's Cup teams.
Barkerati loses money. I'm not going to make us lose any more.
For me, it's about the what can they offer. I mean, take away the whole corporate bullshit, right? Of course, that is important, but it's what can they offer in an experience to the people that are going to get behind them.
Yeah.
As when I mentioned the corporate bullshit, like here's the check, go and do what you want to do. But what can they offer to someone as their experience? And a great experience for being behind such a team such an event. For me, that is the golden, what do you call it? The key. It can't. Otherwise, it's just the same as everyone else knocking on all the other corporate doors.
Otherwise, it's just a brand on a sail burning around a harbour somewhere. You know, some sort of connection to the
which is still good.
Yeah, it's still good, but it's utilising that and pulling it into, as you say, an experience for whether the company, obviously the companies would be looking at the global sort of thing. And what they can offer that in return, I guess that's the key to it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So with we've got direct experience on the Volvo. Like for one of the things I had to do was actually I'd host all the VIP rooms where all the corporate sponsors would bring their guests and try and do deals. So I saw pretty much every deal that was done in the Ocean Race. And I think that's where the real strength, people don't understand. It's not about getting your face in a magazine or your logo up. It's the actual It's the actual deal. Like when you're out racing on the boat and they're there and then they've got somebody they want to do a partnership with, you have this amazing setup where you take the guests out on a boat and then they get entertained. And like I can't tell you the number of times I heard, I get dragged to the Formula One or I get dragged to this so often, and they put you in a room and nothing happens. You know, you watch the race go round and round and then you go out. And with the sailing, you get to meet the sailors, you get to go on the boats, you get to do all sorts of things, you know. And the number of deals that are done are enormous, and the amount of the deals, like huge. Mm. That's the message I reckon they need to understand when going. If you're going to go to sponsors, you've got to have that ability to explain that corporate side. I'm a bit worried about the America's Cup with New Zealand shut down, whether they're going to bring guests in. Like if you were, so you may need to get an Australian New Zealand company, and then they can just, or an Australian company that's trying to crack space in New Zealand, rather than a global company at this stage. But anyway.
Yeah, it's going to play a big factor, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of prestige brands that are starting to target a youth market, like a lead-in brand is what I would be targeting. So it's interesting. It's interesting. But if any of those brands are out there and want to sponsor any of those teams, any of the teams, we know them all, just you can reach out to us and we'll make it happen. But I just wanted to discuss that because I've had quite a few hours of conversations around that. But I think that's the critical thing. Our sport offers so much more than any other sport. That ability to close a deal is like I've never seen anywhere else, and people don't understand that.
Yeah. Hear, hear.
I reckon I've seen well over $1 billion in deals written over the years. So I'd be pretty confident
that's
saying that.
Just amazing.
It is. It is. Speaking of friends doing amazing things, our mates on 11th Hour have just sailed across the Atlantic. We haven't heard from them. I haven't spoken to them.
Yeah, they, by the time this is published, they would have arrived in Newport.
Yeah, that's
and everyone is abiding by the correct COVID manner to go and welcome them into Fort Adams. But essentially they've taken off from their home in France, been with Merconcept, put new foils in the boat, came across the Atlantic and going to spend the rest of the summer in Newport, from what I understand, which is Charlie's hometown. On board, they had Emily Nagel, fan of the show, Sci-Fi, Cole Langford, Mark. I'm not sure if Mark was on board. I was trying to have a look through the photos, but I couldn't exactly find a crew list.
Yep.
But they've obviously got some guns there, without a doubt.
Did they have Abby on?
There's no better way to test your brand new foil than going upwind across the Atlantic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the comment has been made, though, didn't we say that they're actually preferring to go upwind on these boats
more comfortable
than going downwind and doing 40 knots? It's new.
Mate, how good does a boat look, though? Yeah. And with that bit of footage off France that they filmed.
Yeah.
Well, steady, stable, isn't it?
I love that footage when you look at it really closely. It actually has like a little jump and you can see it sort of jumping. Like
quite soft and
back down its foils. It doesn't actually come all the way off its foils and go down into the water. It's really cool.
What do we think of that new Persico foil? Well, I don't know
what I find interesting, actually, not that foil itself, you can tell exactly where that's come from. Mm. But all the other footage, and if you look closely enough, most of the Omokas are using two different foils at the moment for testing purposes, I'd imagine. So it's and they're not getting any smaller, put it that way. Bloody hell, see the new Chiral ones as well? And this one, and Coxie and I have often joked about this. It just turns into a docking nightmare
of these
boats. For the ocean race, for the Vonday's fine because you're not stopping anywhere.
Yeah.
Come the ocean race, try to dock these things, they got a bloody wingspan of 13 metres.
Well, I mean, some of them you can retract fully, but like the new ones on 11th hour with those little
they
winglets.
Hang out enough, exactly.
You can pull them in, a metre maybe? I don't know. I'm sure some of them are sitting there at the moment going, shut up, Jordan, you idiot, they do this.
Well, it doesn't matter when it's set out the water on the windward side anyway, right? So,
yeah. Oh, no, exactly. You don't need to.
Yeah,
exactly. But it's still very cool. It's exciting times.
Oh, no, it's awesome.
Definitely changing the atmosphere and the mood around various the sport in general.
Got the fours in X2 yet, BP?
No, mate, no.
Actually,
above my pay grade.
We should actually say for Lily, I forgot to mention, Lily, it's Lily's birthday end of the month. So we've got so happy birthday, Lily. I forgot to mention that. And then the Figaro starting at the end of the month as well. So we've got a bit to look forward to before we get to the Vendée. So we've got plenty to come. We've got a bit of sailing going on.
Awesome.
Mm.
Looking forward to some good yachting.
Yeah.
But how long is it going to last? That's the question.
All right. Well, that's it, I reckon, gentlemen. Another day in paradise. Done. Dusted.
Beautiful. Been a pleasure working with you, man.
It always is.
And the next 2 weeks, off the beach catamaran special. Can I say that?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Mm. We
off
have
the beach. Love it.
Yeah.
I did see something floating around.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We've gone right to the top of the tree there too. So if you're a catamaran sailor, a catwhacker, then you'll love it. You'll love it. We've done it on purpose for you guys. And if you're just into hearing from really cool sailors, then you'll get that too.
Or if
that's not us,
not if you want, yeah, no, just say not us. You beat me, Bicey. I was just going, what was I going to say here?
Yeah, all right, you idiots. Okay,
yeah,
go on. See you guys.
I love the way Lily's learning her English from us. That's great.
Oh dear,
right, yeah, see you, champs.
Later.